weird, time-sensitive, or just not long enough for a full episode, this is bonus content.
So if you've been around our site or if you've been listening to Game Store Profits, you know that a couple of weeks ago, I was a guest speaker at an event called the Game Church Academy. It's an event that's put on by our friends at Game Church, and it's just a time to get together to hear speakers and to hang out and just play games together. Well, they brought me on, and I was going to be the board game guy because that's kind of my deal. It's my expertise, if you will. And I decided that I was going to talk about what I referred to as incarnational gaming. The idea that as cool as online gaming is and as great as stuff like Tabletop Simulator and just all the crazy things you can do online anymore, as great as all that is, there is something special and something beautiful about physically sitting at the same table together and playing. Now, because of the fact that this is a recurring event and they actually kind of want people to come out and exist in the same space, you know, kind of exactly what I was talking about, they can't just give out all the audio for the event because then, you know, a lot of people would just be like, well, why would I bother to travel out there? Why would I bother to exist in the meat space, as it were, with folks when I can just listen to the speakers anyway? So most of the audio, unless you are there, you're not going to be able to get, and I can't give to you. However, I was given special permission, because I was the speaker, to take the audio of my session and share that with you guys, our audience at Game Store Profits. Now, before I put that out there, before you guys get to listen to that, I want to give a quick little shout-out and to basically advertise that this is a thing, it's not going anywhere, and you should plan on going. Later this year is Academy West, so if you're listening and you're on the western coast of the United States or Canada, or you don't mind an excessively long drive, you can definitely check that out. I will put the link to it in the show notes of this bonus content episode. If that can't be your thing, if you're an East Coaster like me, or it's just too hard to get out there later this year, plan on going there next year. The likelihood that I will be a speaker again next year is pretty significant. Gwaltney has already told me that he wants me to come out again, and provided it's not, you know, super far away, I'm probably going to make it work because I had such a blast. And it's definitely worth your time. It's definitely a cool experience. We had a handful of regulars who had vague notions of what Game Church was about who said, you know what? I think this is awesome. We're going anyway. And it was cool to actually get to know them and to hang out with them and to talk about cool stuff and to even kind of just do cool things like go to a game store. But I won't spend any more time talking about that because I could do that for like all day. And we already had our post-event Game Store Profits episode, so you don't need to hear that again. You can listen to that one instead. I don't have the details of what next year's going to look like. I don't know where it's going to be. I don't know exactly when it's going to be. But you can be listening to our podcast and seeing, you know, all the stuff we have on the tavern and on the site, because I will be promoting it again. It's a very cool event. It's reasonably priced, and it's 2 to 3 days of just hanging out with a bunch of people who love games and love God and want to see these come together. So I want to make sure that I put that out there. Check this out. Be there. And as you listen to what I have to say, it's going to make even more sense as to why there's something important that if you can be there, I really think you should, because there is something about sharing the same space. Here we go. Without further ado, my session, Game Church Academy East 2017.
You're listening to Academy East 2017, presented by Game Church in Whippany, New Jersey.
Yeah, I think other than that, I'm going to turn it over to Mike Perna. If you guys haven't met Mike, you'll obviously get the chance to over the weekend. Mike, you've probably heard, founded and leads Inroad Ministries, and he's going to be able to tell you a lot more about that. And he also has written, I don't know how many articles for our website. Yeah, so he's one of our writers for the website as well. So I'm going to turn it over to Mike. Give him a hand.
Pardon me. I was playing Scythe till 2 a.m. last night and then woke up early this morning. That's right. We don't talk about who won.
Okay.
You don't do that. It's still early for that. Chad talks about it to everybody. I will say, yes, my name is Mike Perna. Gwaltney kind of stole my thunder on a bunch of stuff because I'm going to be like, yes, I founded Inroads Ministries and I do this thing and that thing. I also feel like I have a lot to live up to because when I complained that I was the guy who got put up at 9 a.m. on Saturday morning when all of us are half dead, Gwaltney said, I heard you're the hype man. So I apparently have a lot to live up to and I hope I can do that. A little bit about me. I'm actually, you know, there's a handful of us here, but not as many as I thought there would be. I am a Jersey native, born and raised. There's a couple people. I feel bad for everybody who ended up coming like 4 hours and 12 hours, 24 hours. It took me 40 minutes. I might be going home to hang out with my wife later this evening. So I've always had a heart for games. It's always been a part of who I was, even before I knew it was who I was. Gaming has always been super important to me, and especially tabletop, because I have vivid memories of hanging out with my dad and my brothers. And while other people were playing things like Monopoly and Risk and all that, I was playing things like HeroQuest and Battlemasters and Dark World, and that was my existence. And it was a time where my brothers and I, who we are as vastly different as three brothers can ever be, but at that moment, in those times, it was us hanging with our dad, and we were all there together at the table. And it wasn't until later on that I realized the power of that and the weight of that to bring people together who otherwise would have nothing to do with each other and would bring them together to the same place and to be able to hang out. So that has always been at the heart of what I do. I'll tell you a little bit about Inroads, how it got started, and why we do what we do. Inroads started, oddly enough, on a podcast. It started off because a friend of mine ran an incredibly nerdy podcast about books. And he goes, Mike, you occasionally write steampunk literature. You love going to steampunk conventions. We need a steampunk guy, so come on. And I said, okay. So we ended up talking, and through the course of that podcast, my buddy Luke looked at me and said, we are nerds who love Jesus. We should really do something with that. And at first, I was hesitant because I was already like three things deep. I was already a youth pastor. I was already doing another job because youth pastors don't pay. And I was stretched beyond my comprehension. So I'm like, I can't do another thing. But then I happened to go to a steampunk convention called the Steampunk World's Fair. And it was right around the time when there was a gentleman on the TV and on the radio who was saying, ladies and gentlemen, I know that Jesus is coming back this weekend. And it happened to be the same weekend as the Steampunk World's Fair. So everybody was making fun of it. Yeah, we're going to do this event later, unless Jesus comes back. And so the entire weekend, there was this tongue-in-cheek, like, unless Jesus comes back. There was a guy, I took a picture with a guy dressed as Steampunk Jesus. Like, it was everywhere. And it was, I'd love to say that it was well-intentioned and good faith, but it really kind of wasn't. And this, I just kind of let it roll. I'm like, I'm used to this. This is the crowd I live in. But there was a woman who came up who had found out that I was a youth pastor, and she came up to me just bawling. And she looked at me and she goes, I don't know what to do because I don't fit in anywhere. Because if I go to things like this, the people at my church look at me weird. If I show up in cosplay or even a t-shirt that has, you know, a geeky sort of thing on it, I get weird looks, and I get people who come up to me saying, is this really something that a Christian should do? He said, but when I come to events like this, I have weekends like this where the entire crowd is mocking my God and my faith. So I literally don't fit in anywhere. Both of these places I call home, but neither one of them fully is. And that broke my heart. In the parking lot, I was praying with her, and literally that night when I went home, I called up Luke, and I'm like, Luke, we need to do something because I know for a fact that she's not the only one who feels like this. So that led to a podcast called Game Store Prophets, and it's crazy to me how long ago we started that. We just did episode 153, and I'll actually be recording some stuff today for episode 154. But that led to, at one point, we both looked at each other from across the country, because Luke was out in California, and I'm here in New Jersey, didn't talk about it at all. But one night, both of us just kind of message each other and go, you know, I can't get away from the fact that I think God really wants to do something else with this. Like, this podcast is cool, and I really think we should keep doing it, but I think God has more to do with this. And both of us came to that conclusion on opposite coasts. So we go, I'm pretty confident this is a God thing. And shortly after that, we came up with the idea of Inroads Ministries. And there's a lot of formal stuff I could tell you about our mission statement and all that, but here's the version that I always tell people, because it's, you know, if you've ever seen a mission statement, we all say, oh, they're so easy to remember, and they're really not. But the short version of Inroads is that we work with church and community groups to basically encourage them and train leaders to use gaming to demonstrate the love of God to others. Now, sometimes that means, you know, we work within the church and we get people who don't necessarily hang out together to get to hang out together. I often say to people that my first introduction to real hobby level strategy gaming was in seminary when a guy who was a summer student, a PhD student who was 30 years older than me, said, hey, I have this game called Ivanhoe. Do you guys want to play? So age is a barrier that gets destroyed. Background gets destroyed. I've even seen language not play a part. There are certain dice games that you can play and you don't even need to share language. So we work with churches and say, hey, here's the thing. I've never been in a church organization where at some point in a leadership meeting, they've looked at each other and said, how do we get the kids and the adults hanging out together? How do we get these people hanging out together who wouldn't normally? How do we get that kind of mentor-mentee thing? I said, give me 20 minutes and some cardboard. And I promise you I can make that happen. And that is pretty much the heart of what we do. And it's been really interesting. Like, it's been great to see that, like, we've had a slow boil kind of thing. And it's only been probably within the last year that we've started really getting traction. But, man, I still am blown away by the stories that I get. My absolute favorite is, and I it's funny because I had to get his formal permission to say this because I say it all the time. There is a game designer who created a game called Targi. It's one of the most well-respected two-player games on the planet. And one day I get an email from a guy in Berlin, and he goes, hey, my name's Andy Steiger. I really appreciate what you guys do. And I'm like, where do I know that name from? And I look and I'm like, oh, you designed Targi. And you know who I am. And he told me the story about that is kind of the progression. He is the poster child for what we do, because the first email he sent me was, I felt like I couldn't be in church. I left the church. I wanted nothing to do with the church because I didn't think I could be who I was and be a part of the church. He said, listening to your podcast made me realize that I'm just a part of the church as anyone else, that I can be in this environment and still be who I am. So thank you. That was the first email I got. The next email I got from Andy was a little bit farther down the line. He had returned to church, and he told the story about how he ran a board game group, just a regular board game group, monthly at his house. And he told the story about how he was frustrated because his brother one night said, hey, I want to bring this guy. And it was super last minute, so he's like, dang it, I didn't buy food for this guy. I don't know what I'm going to do. Fine, bring him anyway. Well, this guy came, and he started coming regularly. And he started showing up all the time. And every time he did, Andy was like, look, this guy, you know, God cares about this guy. My brother cares about this guy. I care about this guy. So I need to actively start being a part of this guy's life. So every time he showed up to game group, he would look, and Andy would walk up to the guy and say, how's your family? How are you doing? Is there something I can be praying for you about? What do you need, and how can I do that? After several months of this, the guy walked up to him and he said, your brother has been trying to get me to go to church for as long as I've known him, and I have never wanted to take him up on it. If you ask me to go to church with you tomorrow, I'm going. And when Andy asked why, the guy looked at him and said, because every day I show up to your house, and you are always welcoming me, and you are always asking me, how can you help me? You've shown me over these months that you care about me, and that means something. And that right there is why I love tabletop gaming, the tabletop community, and why gaming is a beautiful thing. But I also acknowledge the fact that pretty much everybody in this room is in this room because of our online interactions. It was super fun for me because for a lot of people, there's only a handful of people in this room that I had physically met before yesterday. And really, some of them I actually know before Game Church ever was a thing. Probably the only person I met physically beforehand was Drew. And that was, gosh, I don't even know how many years ago that was at Gen Con. It's got to be something like that. And yet, every time I saw somebody, it wasn't like, oh, who are you? It was hugs. It was excited to see you. And it was a great thing. I'm not here as the tabletop guy to say online communication sucks and we need to get to the... No, I am not that guy at all, because there is a huge, wonderful power in our interactions together. But while I'm not going to disparage that at all, I do want to be the guy that says, and yet, there is something beautiful and powerful and wonderful about physically interacting with the people you're playing with. About occupying the same space, breathing the same air. And it's not relegated just to tabletop games. If you're listening to me and saying, but I don't really get into board games. We are literally witnessing on these TVs couch co-op. And couch co-op, when I was a kid playing video games, that was everything. There wasn't online gaming. It was get your buddies together, get your friends and family together, and play some games. Heck, I still remember back when I was in seminary, we literally ran cable through our entire dorm so we could do LAN parties in our dorm rooms. Like, our gaming was so intense, we needed construction. Because we still wanted to be able to play together. We'd have parties where we'd hook it up to the big screen and run Halo tournaments. Like, that was it, man. I love that. And I don't get to do as much video gaming as I used to because, you know, my wife doesn't allow for the fact that, hey, honey, I want to hook this thing up and take up the TV for a couple of hours. It's just, no. But even though I don't get to do that, it's more about this idea of the table, more about this idea of getting people together. And there's still days when I miss getting those guys together and shooting the crap out of people and getting somebody stuck with a plasma grenade and hearing somebody in the next room over shout, oh my goodness, I can't believe he got me again. There's a couple things that I want to point out here and really to discuss the value of this physical element of gaming and the value of that, I kind of broke it down because there's not just one element, there's lots of elements to it. And there's a practical element, an emotional element, and even a theological element of why we should be playing together. As much as we love online stuff, we need to be making room in our churches and even in just our friend groups to play together. First up, I want to do the practical, and I can't say let's talk about the practical elements without actually having a practical element. So I need three volunteers. I see your hand. I see your hand. And Alan, get up here. You have an unfair advantage because I think were you part of when I played this yesterday? Win, loser, banana.
Yes.
Okay, so you have a slight advantage, but it is only slight. Normally, when I talk about the vastness of tabletop gaming, I need a third person, so come on up. When I talk about the vastness of tabletop gaming, the earliest, the small end of that spectrum is a game called Win, Loser, Banana. I literally carry Win, Loser, Banana in my wallet.
That's awesome.
And I'm going to quickly shuffle this up. And all of you are going to get a card, but do not reveal what you got yet. Okay.
Can I look at it?
You can definitely look at it, because my first question is going to be, who got Win? You got Win. However, you haven't won quite yet, because the person who got Win has to then decide who got Banana. So if you pick the person who got Banana, you both win. If, however, the person who got lose can convince you that they, in fact, have banana. Everybody, a little reverse psychology, I love it. You don't. I'm not the banana you're looking for. But if you can pick the person who got banana, if you pick the person who got lose, everybody loses. So this is a game where if you got lose, you do want to see the world burn. So I'm going to give you guys a second here to explain how she should know that you, in fact, are the one who has banana.
I agree with her.
She's got banana. Oh, my God.
I think you have
banana. Okay. Thank you, guys. You have now... Yeah. I love win, lose, or banana. But here's the thing. There's a practical element to gaming because if you put that online, and I know this for a fact because Asmodee Games actually has Win, Lose, or Banana online, and all you do is click a button and it shows you your card. Click, you won. Click, oh, you got banana. That's it. That's all the game is. Though I will say that it does keep stats for you. It will show you exactly how many times you got win, lose, or banana. But that game online is rubbish. It's literally, did I get win or not? But, and these guys did a great job. It was so amazing because it's the perfect illustration because this could have gone horribly wrong, but it went so right. Doing this in this physical space where you can look at each other, that moment of, I don't trust anybody. Those are the things that happen and have a physical, they have a weight to them when you're actually looking at the person. When you are staring across the room or the table at that person and say, I don't know, do you have banana? There's that moment of if that person was online or something, you could do it. But who's going to spend the rest of the day talking about, oh my goodness, that time when they did that. Oh my, can you believe she picked banana? That was great. Nobody's going to do that if all it is yeah, I got win. But here it becomes a moment. Here it becomes a thing. Because we're sharing that together. We can see the facial expressions. We can laugh together. When somebody says when Alan's like she has banana, there's that moment I heard that giggle of laughter, and that giggle of laughter is infectious. That's the kind of stuff that there's that physical, practical element to this. There's another thing. There's an entire genre of game called dexterity games. Yesterday, Rhino Hero was getting played. And if you didn't see it, Rhino Hero is a combination of Uno and reverse Jenga. You are trying to play all the cards from your hand, and they do things like reverse the order or have the next person draw cards or stuff like that. But the whole time you are trying to use cards, flimsy little cards, to build a tower. And not only that, but every once in a while there's a card that gets played where you have to move a tiny little wooden rhino from its place on this rickety tower on top of it. And I will tell you, there is nothing more tense than when a gentleman with as large a digit as I have, with a tower that's already swaying, has somebody play Rhino. It's the most terrifying and wonderful thing ever. And you can't do that with people who aren't in the same room. And I know the power of that because when it happened yesterday and it started to get taller and people started to talk about it, I wasn't playing, I was watching. And I saw as heads from around the room are looking and going, what's happening? What is that thing? I saw as everyone started, there was a time when it started swaying. Thomas was literally trying to grab this rhino. And I saw as somebody in the front of the room was like, There is something about this very practical element of existing in the same place that as much as we want to recreate that online, we just can't. So as great as that is and as wonderful a tool as that is, there is still something magical about just being together. For the emotional element, And this is when I'm going to get real with y'all. If you've ever listened to our podcast, you've heard me do it. If you've ever listened to my other podcast, which is a more devotional podcast, I've said it there. I've written articles about it. So if you came in here knowing inroads, you already know this story. My entire life, I've dealt with depression. And if you look at me now, you might not have known that because I'm very good at hiding it. I'm very, very good. I am practiced. And when somebody says, how are you doing? I say, I'm doing great. When inside, I'm getting destroyed. And I know I'm not the only one in that, because not only is it logical, but I've gotten emails. Every time I've shared it on our podcast, every time I've written about it, somebody has written me back and said, I thank you so much for talking about this, because this is what my life looks like. Online, it's super easy to hide it. We curate Facebook, we curate our social media, we curate the way we interact with people online. Heck, some of our online interactions are even like completely different personalities. I got really good at hiding it to the point where even my wife, if she says, how are you doing? And I say, I'm doing fine. She has practiced that there are times when she looks at me and she says, are you lying? And that is my wife. And I have promised her that if she asks me, am I lying? I have to answer honestly to her. I'm required to put away the mask and say, no, I'm not fine. No, I'm not okay. And here's the thing about existing and playing together. When people know you, they know when you're full of it. They know when you've put the mask on. Especially the people who you really let into your life. I've played Dungeons & Dragons together with the same group of guys for over 10 years. These guys are like brothers. When I did get married, I just mentioned my wife. When I did get married, we were having the problem of we had too many friends and not enough money to pay for them to all come to the reception. So the hardest part for me was actually figuring out who could come. One of the first things I said was, these guys are coming. Half those guys, when they got married, I was the one who performed the ceremony. One of the guys ended up having cancer and needed surgery. I was his first phone call because he said, Mike, I need you to pray for me. These guys know me, and they can look and they can see the subtle clues that I try very good to hide. They can see those subtle ticks and those little things that say, Mike's not actually okay today. It's not seen through a camera. It's not heard through a microphone, because again, I'm very good at hiding. And there are people with emotional baggage that have become very practiced at hiding how broken and hurt they are. When you are sitting across the table from somebody and you have sat across the table from them for years, you can't hide from them. You can't put the mask on, because they see the straps that are holding it on. And they can take it apart because they need to take it apart. Because when you're actually real with that person, you're able to do that. And when you're not able to do it, they make you, because they know it makes you better. There will always be that powerful moment at the table. And I will always be a proponent that the stuff we carry, the stuff that we don't even realize we're carrying. I talk about that mask. I've put that mask on not even knowing I was doing it. Because again, I just got that good at it. I put it on and I was wrecked, but I didn't let anybody know about that. And I didn't even realize I was hiding it. But then my wife looks at me. Are you lying to me? And I had to say yes. Because she knows me. The last element I want to talk about is the theological element. We are, you know, a lot of times in Game Church, we kind of put that off to this, that, the other thing in the city. But here, we're all people who are trying to love and serve Jesus. I'm going to put it out there. There is always a very physical element to the way we worship, to the way God sees us, and just the way we interact with him. There was there's actually a heresy that says that our physical doesn't matter. It was put down because that it has always been tied to things. The obvious one that I can cite is the fact that Jesus still has his scars. Resurrected Jesus still has the scars. They were touched. They were experienced. They were seen. That body is still important. When he was resurrected, he was not resurrected as just some spirit. He resurrected everything, who he was. His physical body is just as much a part of that as anything else. So on that level, yeah, there is that importance of physical. But it goes beyond that, because even in the way we worship and the way we minister, there has always been a physical element. One of the more interesting times I've ever seen in the studies I've done about the way Jesus healed. Jesus healed lots of different ways, and he proved that he didn't need to even be there. Guys come up to him and said, "Lord, I need you to come heal my kid. I need you to be there." And he goes, "Go home. You're already healed." There was a time when he didn't even intentionally do it. Someone touched me, and I felt power come through me, and they were healed. Who was it? So he's proven that he didn't need to physically do an act of healing. But there's one other story. There's one other story when even Jesus himself, there was a blind man who came up to him, and he's looking for healing. And for some reason, and I'm not, that's a whole other, I could do a sermon on why this is different. But for some reason, Christ bends down, and he spits in the dirt, and he makes mud, and he puts it across his eyes. And then he's like, "Can you see?" And he says, "I see men like trees." So again, there's this ritual of spitting and placing mud. And then the man was healed. There's this, even though he had no necessary reason to do this physical act to heal this man, he chose to. And again, that's a whole other sermon as to why he would do that. I highly recommend getting home and studying that, because it's really cool. There's another thing. No matter what your tradition, some traditions it's more of a thing, some traditions it's less of a thing, but every one of us knows has something that we do physically on a Sunday morning. There are people who are very, you know, go to very liturgical services, which is very, you stand here, you sit here, you kneel here, you do this here. Some people might be Orthodox and say there's incense and icons and all this stuff. There may be even the super quote-unquote non-traditional. This is one thing we were talking about this morning, is that even in a non-traditional service, I promise you there's tradition, because all you need to do is change the order of a thing on Sunday morning and see how many emails you get. There is a tradition, and there is physical elements to that. Some people, not everybody does it, but some people, when they worship, they raise their hands. That's a physical act. There are some services when you go and they do healing services, and I actually have a buddy who always, on him at all points, has little thing of anointing oil in his pocket, because when somebody comes for healing, he will pray for them and put that oil across their forehead, because that's what the Bible says. You come and you anoint with oil. There's so much in Scripture, the way we interact with each other, the way we interact with God, that has a physical element to it. So again, I'm going to be a huge proponent of every online thing, every good and great game that happens online, every cool conversation that happens over Discord. I love all of it. Heck, this ministry that I've been running for 4 years, one of the guys who helps me do it is in California, and he and I have never occupied the same room. I have a huge respect for what happens online. But if I had to choose, if gun to my head, you had to say, get rid of every technology that lets you do that, or get rid of everything that you do together. Live an isolated life online, or live a life filled with people and surrounded by people. I will always pick that, because there is something truly beautiful of being able to sit across the table and see that look in their eye, know when they're full of it, and know when they're being completely and totally open and honest with you. So this event is all about takeaways and how you can go home and do likewise. So as a guy who literally next weekend is going to go and do likewise, I have some things. One is, not everybody here has the kind of board game collection that I do. No, lots of people do, just not in this room. I just went to go. There was a game designer who I interviewed. He actually lives pretty close to me, and he's like, "Let's go down to the basement where I have my games." And I walked through this thing, and I'm like, "How many do you have?" He goes, 1,500. Oddly enough, not the largest game collection I've heard of, but he said 1,500. And if you want to talk to me later, oh my goodness, I could tell you stories of the things I saw in that basement. It's so cool. So cool. But it's so cool. The things I saw in that basement, man.
That's a Discord.
That's I think it should. Please somebody do that. I think this is being recorded. Please make that a Discord button. I will push it repeatedly. This is the downside. This is the downside of doing a soundbite that's so perfect. I find myself going, "Crap, what am I supposed to say now?" Even if you don't have that kind of collection, it's easier now than ever to get board games. You no longer have to go to the specialty store or sit in the corner and find like go behind the curtain to find the good stuff. None of that exists anymore because you can go to Target and Walmart and Barnes and Noble. Barnes and Noble actually has a really impressive selection these days. It's amazing. So and not only that, going back to how valuable online is, most of my games come from online because the selection is incredible. So even if you get like a game, find one that you love, find one that you know you'll get people to the table and pick it up. Just to have it on your shelf, just to have it for that moment, just to have it for that Rhino Hero moment. Rhino Hero is $12. Nobody has an excuse.
Your shirts are more.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Here, I'll give you win, loser, banana, $1. So get something and get people playing. But if you've never touched a board game in your life and you're like, it's not my thing, again, I'll point to the screens we have over here. Because I promise you, if tabletop isn't your thing, y'all have games. There's a reason you're a part of Game Church. Find ones that you can play with people and invite them physically. Especially anymore, indie games are either by choice or by technical limitation are creating couch co-op games that are brilliant. I'd never played Towerfall before this weekend. Holy crap. If I had a console, I would never not be playing Towerfall. That was a blast. And it reminded me of those old days of playing Halo in the lobby of my dorm because that was what it is. What was that stupid game we were playing? The dodgeball game. Yes, that thing is awesome. And I that one also has that moment of it's really cool to just turn and say to somebody, "I can't believe you died because I hit you with a whale." Soundbite. And again, yeah, that interaction can happen online, but it's so great when you can physically look and say, "Did you see that?" So find something that fits in your niche. The reason I cite board games is because the board game arena is so vast and so crazy. It goes from everything like win, lose, or banana all the way up to the not even beyond the 3-hour epic of Scythe that we play. There's a game called Twilight Imperium 3. I've never seen TI3 finished in less than 6 hours. You can even go to a place. There's a thing that's happening now called the Mega Game Society. Mega Game Societies are role-playing games where every group of like 8 people is playing a nation, and they're all in one room, and this crazy stuff is happening, and there's actual politics going on. And there's things. My favorite one that I saw on a video was somebody said, "Hey, we've got this particular intel, the Joshua Initiative, and we're going to sell it to you for like however many thousands of dollars." And they're like, "Ooh, that sounds awesome." So they ended up getting it. They open up the envelope, and it's a picture of a guy. And they go back to the person and say, "What's this?" He goes, "That's Mr. Joshua." and like that stuff is happening like all over this room. So we go from the little to the big. I promise you there is something in that continuum that will speak to you. So it is there. There's also just... remember that whether it's games, whether it's that or like that, that's awesome and I love all of it. But the kind of underlying principle of that is make sure that if you're living online, that's awesome. Enjoy that. relish in the coolness of being able to talk to people from other countries. Heck, that email I cited from Andy. Andy's in Germany. I have a guy I talked to in Australia that Daniel talks all the time to about miniatures painting. Like, the stuff that exists is awesome, but don't ever forget to take time. Whether it's over a game, whether it's in a Bible study, whether it's just hanging out over the proverbial cup of coffee. Take the time to physically interact with as many people as you can, because those are the moments when Jesus really speaks. When you get behind all the stuff, when you can look at somebody across the table and say, "Are you lying to me?" And know that whatever they say after that is 100% truth, because you can see it in their face. There's a lot of stuff you're going to hear this weekend about all the cool stuff that gaming does, but I'm here to be the guy to tell you, never forget that part of it. Never forget the part about actually occupying the same space. I'll end with this. I'm a rugby fan. I became a rugby fan because I went to seminary with a bunch of guys from New Zealand. And because I went to school with a bunch of guys from New Zealand, I learned the wonder that is the All Blacks. And if you've no idea what I'm talking about, the All Blacks do this thing called the haka. And if you've never seen a haka, find me after, because I've got some videos to show you that will change your life. Exactly. But because I became such a fan of the All Blacks and because I follow them on Facebook, I get to see all this stuff about New Zealand culture because they put that on there. And there's this cool tradition that I only recently discovered that I love. When two guys from New Zealand hang out together, they see each other for the first time in a while, or they want to say how much they appreciate the other person. You'll see them walk up to each other and go nose to nose, like forehead to forehead, nose to nose. And I was seeing that for a while on all these videos of hakas and ceremonies and all that. I'm like, the heck is going on? That's clearly a thing. So what is it? And I did a little research and found out that what that is that they want you to acknowledge that they love you so much that they are proud to share the same air that you do. That they are so close that they want to know that the breath I breathe is the same breath you breathe. And that's the image I want to leave with. As cool as all that other stuff is, never forget to share the same air. Because that's the kind of relationship that God wants with us, and it's the relationship that we should have with others.